The dawn broke, and the first shafts of sunlight beamed through the gaps in the thunderheads and turned the waters of the ocean to glowing amethyst. It played full upon the three ships. They lay motionless, like toys on a village pond. The sea was glassy smooth, its surface marred only by the skittering flight of the flying fish and the swirls of the great silver and gold tuna that pursued them. The shot-torn sails hung slack and empty. From each ship the sounds of the carpenter's hammers and saws rang out as they hurriedly repaired the battle damage. The sailmakers laid out the damaged canvas on the decks and squatted over it, long needles flying as they cobbled up the tears and rents. They all knew that this respite would not last long, that the morning breeze would rise and the next phase of the conflict must begin. Through the telescope, Mansair watched the crew of the Arcturus extinguish the last flames, then sent new spars aloft to replace the broken bowsprit and the yards that had been burned or shot away. "Is your mother aboard the Arcturus?" Mansair asked Verity.
6 weeks ago my father sent her back to the safety of the consulate in Bombay," Verity answered.
She did not want to think about Caroline now, or of the circumstances in which she had last seen her. To change the subject, she asked, "Will you fight again?" "Are you afraid?" he asked. She turned to him. Her eyes were green and her gaze was direct.
"That question is unkind."
"Forgive me," he said at once. "I do not doubt your courage, for you proved it to me last night. I wanted only to know your feelings."
"I am not afraid for myself, but my father is aboard the other ship, and you are on this one.
I saw him strike you."
"He has struck me many times before, but he is still my father."
Then she lowered her eyes.
"More important than that, though, you are now my man. I am afraid for both of you, but I will not flinch."
He reached out and touched her arm.
"I will do my utmost to avoid further battle," he assured her. "I would have done so last night, but my own father was in danger. I had no choice but to come to his aid. However, I doubt that Sir Guy will let you and me escape without he does everything in his power to prevent it."
He nodded grimly towards the distant Arcturus.
"Here comes the morning wind," she said. "Now my father's intentions will be made plain."
The wind scoured the polished Asia surface with cat's paws. The Arcturus's sails bulged and she began to glide forward. All her yards were standing, and bright new canvas had replaced much of that which had been scorched and blackened. The wind left her behind, and she slowed gradually, then came once more to a standstill. Her mainsail flapped and drooped. The squall of wind came on and picked up the two smaller ships, carried them a short distance, then dropped them. Again stillness and silence fell on the three vessels. All their sails were set, and the upper yardmen were poised to make the final adjustments when the wind came again. This time it came out of the east, hard and steady. It caught up the Arcturus first and bore her on. The instant she had steerage way, she put up her helm and charged straight towards the two smaller ships. Her guns were still run out, and her intentions manifest.
"I'm afraid your father is spoiling for a fight."
"And so are you," Verity accused him.
"You misjudge me," he shook his head. "I have already taken the prize. Sir Guy has nothing more that I want from him."
"Then let us hope that the wind reaches us before he does." As Verity spoke, it puffed against her cheek and blew a long strand of hair across her eyes. She tucked it back into the silk hairnet.
"Here it comes."
The wind struck the Sprite and she heeled to it. Her canvas slatted and her blocks rattled as her sails filled and bulged. They could feel the force of it in the eager trembling of the deck beneath their feet, and despite the exigencies of the moment, Verity laughed aloud with excitement.
"We are off," she cried,
and for a moment clung to his arm. Then she saw Kumra's disapproving expression and stepped back.
"I need no chaperone aboard this ship, for I have 100 already."
The Sprite raced down towards the Revenge, which still lay becalmed, but then the wind reached her also. The two ships bore away together, the Revenge leading by 2 cables' length. Mansair looked back over the stern at the pursuit. "With the wind coming from this quarter, your father can never catch us," he told Verity exultantly. "We will run him below the horizon before nightfall." He took her arm and led her gently towards the companionway. "I can safely leave the deck to Kumra now, and we can go below to find suitable accommodation for you." "There are too many eyes here," she agreed, and followed him willingly. At the bottom of the ladder, he turned her to face him. She was only a few inches shorter than he was, and the thick, lustrous coils of her hair made the difference even less obvious.
"There are no other eyes here," he said.
"I fear I have been gullible." Her cheeks blushed pink as rose petals. "But you would never take advantage of my innocence, would you, Your Highness?"
"I am afraid you may have overestimated my chivalry, Miss Courtney. It is my intention to do exactly that."
"I suppose that it would be of no avail if I should scream, would it?"
"I am very much afraid that it would not," he said. She swayed towards him. "Then I shall save my breath," she whispered, "for perhaps I will find better employment for it later." "Your lip is swollen," he touched it gently. "I will not hurt you."
"We Courtneys are a hardy lot," she said. He kissed her, but softly.
It was Verity who pulled him closer and parted her swollen lips to him.
"It hurts not at all," she said.
And he lifted her in his arms and carried her through into his cabin.